Based upon what we have just sung, would you turn with me, please, to Colossians chapter 2, verse 20. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, referring to things that all perish as they are used according to human precepts and teachings. These have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting self-made religion and asceticism and severity to the body, but they are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. That last statement is a critical theme for us tonight. What then is, Paul, of value in stopping racism? What then is, Paul, of value in stopping abuse, oppression, injustice? We can be certain that even religious efforts, social constructs, systems are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. Please keep that in mind as now we enter into our first real session. Last time it was an introduction. We introduced the term woke, which is a past participle form of the idea of to be awake to realities, problems in culture that, well, the assumption is the culture is asleep and doesn't see these problems. So to be woke is to be alert and aware of these specific problems. I suggested that it's sort of the umbrella under which all the various aspects of critical race theory, social justice, sexual autonomy, all of these features find themselves under this umbrella called woke, because woke simply identifies the need to be aware. And with it, it's built entirely upon one fundamental premise, and that is the oppressed and the oppressor, namely in racism. I would invite you to look now at session two here. We are entering into cultural Marxism. Draw your attention to page 22, which is really the flip side of the first page. Karl Marx said this: philosophers have hitherto only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it. His point? I'm not satisfied being a philosopher on the shelf with the other philosophers who simply offer an interpretation. No, I'm here to make change. Beloved and friends, I ask you then, is woke in all of its various ideologies an analytical tool, or is it a worldview? It has been stated by the Southern Baptist Convention in adopting Resolution 9 in 2019 that woke should be adopted among Southern Baptist churches as an analytical tool. Well, Vody Bauckham nailed it when he said, tools don't interpret, worldviews do. Glasses don't interpret. They just give you sight. A tool doesn't interpret. You do. A worldview interprets. So I suggest this, that we understand as we move into this, that all that's under the umbrella of woke deals with a worldview that has an interpretation grid. It has a lens through which you see and from which you extract meaning. You can read this excerpt from Vodi Bakum on that page later. It's striking. It's very significant. On page 23, I want to draw your attention to just an introduction to the idea of a worldview in a culture, not just a personal individual worldview. Glenn Sunshine says this very well. He says, like people, cultures also have worldviews, and these worldviews shape the society. He goes on to say, for example, what people believe is real determines what is taught and what is studied. You know what is being studied in the universities of America today with regard to creation, with regard to the universe and the material realm of matter and motion? Atheistic naturalism. You know what's being taught in universities today about social justice, racial harmony? Cultural Marxism. In other words, what is believed to be real determines what is taught and what is studied, as do ideas concerning the nature of knowledge. That's epistemology. Questions of ethics that shape laws. Concepts of humanness influence everything from the structure of families to whether or not to hold slaves to principles of law and justice and to who has what rights. This was written in 2009 before woke became an issue. Insightfully, it nailed exactly what a culture will do. When a culture believes something, it's what it teaches and the outworking of its ethics and even in the assumptions of its epistemology. And if you remember those big words, those compose the triangle of the foundation of any worldview. We'll look at that in a moment. This is insightful as well. He continues to say, to understand a culture or a civilization, you have to understand its worldview, since all of its successes and failures are largely the product of the basic ideas that shape the society. In fact, the society's worldview will inevitably shape the culture around its ideas, which means that the logical implications of these ideas will inevitably be followed by the culture, if it survives long enough. And if you want to understand why and how a civilization changes over time, you need to track the evolution of its dominant worldview. That's an incredibly important concept. That's really where I want to go tonight, is I think step one, to understand, first and foremost, to understand in your own heart so that you process right what you're hearing and what you're seeing, and so that you, to the glory and honor of Christ and for the stewardship of the grace of God in you and for the good and joy of those around you, that you need to understand where this worldview, where this system of thought comes from. We need to track the evolution of this worldview. We need to understand, where does woke come from? What are its fundamental belief tenets? So with that in mind, I encourage you to consider with me the ideological root of this system. I state it very plainly in the paragraph near the bottom of 23, woke ideologies are rooted in cultural Marxism. What is that? It's a form of Marxism applied to cultural inequalities. As with Marxism, classically that is, it dogmatically offers a diagnostic explanation and solution to a culture's systemic corruption. To better understand the connection between woke and cultural Marxism, we must understand a bit more about the original vision of Karl Marx. We could spend a lot of time on Karl Marx. It's not my intent, but I do want to walk you through this briefly. I think it's essential for us to understand the vision. Karl Marx was a philosopher from Germany, born of Jewish parents. very ironically, his ideas were the very ideas that fortified Nazi Germany that sought to exterminate Jews. Very ironic. He was born in 1818, and when he was born in that world, you can turn over to the next page, it was very unsettled, and especially in the realm of intellectual engagement. The academy at the time in France was reeling from the French Revolution. You have this world, this European world that was in great turmoil, and I could just suggest to you this one very important reason, the cause. The time that Karl Marx was born, he was born into a world that was experiencing really the tumult and the radical shaking that resulted from the revolution of enlightenment, where God was displaced by man, where divine revelation was displaced by human reason. This is truly the background into which Marx began to think. You can look there in the second line at the top of page 24. Marx studied and applied the views of George Hegel, a significant contributor to German idealism. German idealism basically called for a radical confidence in human reason. He was a child of the Enlightenment who followed the teachings of Immanuel Kant. And this goal of enlightened thinking that Hegel promoted, you'll note this quote, "The goal is not to achieve an idea that corresponds with the object of thought. It is to be that object of thought." In other words, you essentially create the reality you want. It moved away from the human being as an observer, one who discovers reality, to one who makes reality. Have any of you experienced that today? That school of thought? I can't do this. I don't have the time, but I got to tell you this. When I would fly to seminary back and forth every week, I would evangelize my head off every time I had an opportunity. One time a young man sat next to me and I began to enter the gospel any way I can. And so I don't recall how, but somehow we got to this point and relativism was obviously an issue. So I began to ask him, so you think, you actually believe that you create reality? And he looked at me, someone made in the image of God. And he said, yes. I couldn't believe my ears. I thought, time out. You really think right now, you really think that your thoughts create reality? Yes. And so then I went on with some science about 30,000 feet and, 9.8 meters per second squared, gravitational pull of acceleration down to the ground and the whole concept of terminal velocity and how that would cause a real problem that his thoughts would not be able to alter. And it got him to think a little bit more. But I just find that this is amazing. This goes way back. Enlightenment thought moved from the objective to the subjective. And it gave rise to a whole new milieu of thought and views about reality. Marx was also influenced by Jean Rousseau, the philosopher who rejected the doctrine of original sin and who believed instead that all of the problems in the world were not the result of some original sin, as though things were once good and were instantly made bad, and we are somehow progressively trying to deal with that. No, he thought, his theory, Rousseau, was that, no, actually, it's evolution, it's the progress. He was thinking philosophically, evolution, the progress of human thought and society and prosperity, which brings disparity and inequality, that is what causes all the evils in the world. And you are served the French Revolution. Guillotines in the streets, literally heads rolling, blood, complete anarchy. One of the most grotesque moments of human history. Well, Marx was influenced by this. Why? Well, these thoughts, Marx was born into a world of all kinds of revolution where man was the center, objectivism was put away, everything became relative, human reason was God, and he saw around him suffering, pain, inequality. But even those things are not the main reason. The main reason is because Rousseau, Hegel were atheistic in their thinking. They despised God. They hated the church. And they saw the progress, even of Christianity in particular, as responsible for the disparities and the consequent struggles in culture. Enter in atheism. Marxism is, first of all, atheism. Note it. Marxism is, first of all, atheism. Marx was an avid atheist. His Jewish family in Germany actually left Judaism and went to Lutheranism, and then he rejected it entirely. We don't know all the story there. He doesn't talk much about it, but some biographers suggest that there was some animosity because of losing or leaving his historic roots, his heritage, and entering into a cultural religion. So it brought about a disdain. Well, atheism is really the most foundational principle of Marxism. Everything else flows from it. In the words of the Manifesto of the Communist Party, written by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, you need to note this. This is hugely important. He says, very basically, Marxism abolishes all religion. In fact, he goes on in the Principles of Communism stating this, and I quote, "All religions so far have been the expression of historical stages of development of individual peoples or groups of peoples, but communism is the stage of historical development which makes all existing religions superfluous and brings about their disappearance." This is not just a way to see the culture. This is not just a way to interpret the culture. This is a bona fide replacement of the culture's hope. He seeks to cause Christianity in particular to disappear. In fact, Marx not only constructed his ideology on atheism, he viewed Christianity in particular as the barrier to true progress. The theologian John Frame notes this well. He says, Marx described religion, particularly Christianity, as an opiate, a kind of drug given to the poor by the rich to persuade them that revolution is not needed. Under the influence of the opiate, they come to think that they will get their due reward through some social change and eventually a reward in the sky by and by. So Marxists regard religion as a barrier to revolution, and therefore a barrier to truly radical social change. Now, beloved and friends, all these quotes so far, they have nothing to do with what's happening right now in the sense that they're not written with that in mind. These things are written long ago about the fundamental worldview of Marxism. And I want you to keep that in mind because this language and the sort of things they're saying are exactly what we're seeing in new clothes. Turn over to 25 and you'll see materialism. From an atheistic worldview, it follows that a major feature of Marxist thought is materialism. Marx believed that human thought was the outcome of material processes and that human life was based not on immaterial realities like truths and absolutes and principles, ethics, laws, thought, etc., but exclusively on material reality. In other words, that moves into determinism, where it's just a matter of matter and motion. One thing hits one thing, and that hits another thing, and there's really no intellect, there's really no design. Everything's just an accident and fortuitous. This is absurdity. This worldview is absurd. Because as he argues with intent and intellect and advocates values that are not tangible, that are not material, he's denying that they can have any meaning. The very thing he's promoting cannot have meaning. It moves into economic determinism. Since Marx believed that ultimate causes were material, not mental, he concluded that the ultimate causes of conflict in the world were economic. He divided the world into two classes, the haves and the have-nots. The haves were the oppressors, and the have-nots were the oppressed. In his terminology, the haves were the bourgeois, or the bourgeoisie, and the have-nots were the proletariat. The bourgeoisie were the owners. The proletariat were the workers. This connection is crucial in defining really the mark of political communism, where it states in their very first principle, in the Communist Manifesto, the very first principle of communism, abolition of property in land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. Why? Because Marx's utopian vision included equality of outcomes, and therefore justice would be measured by equal distribution, not equal treatment. Equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. These are significant differences in his economic views. Well, all of it boils down to then, how does he appeal? How does he sell this? Well, he sells it based upon his main proposition as what really attaches to the cultural's desire and need is the class struggle. The class struggle. In Marx's view, class conflict defines human history. He saw this as a primitive stronghold against human evolutionary progress. And yes, he was, in fact, a great admirer of Charles Darwin. He wrote a letter to Charles Darwin at the publication in 1859 of The Origin of Species, and he asked if Charles Darwin would write the foreword to the Communist Manifesto, because he told Darwin that he inspired him. Marx taught that the prosperity of the owners, the bourgeois, was at the expense of the workers, the proletariat. In this arrangement, conflict is an unavoidable consequence. There is no possibility of reconciling the two parties so that they can live together in peace. They can only jostle for position until full-scale class war breaks out. Notice where this goes. Are you following with me? Are you with me? I want to make sure I'm not up here for me. Okay. I pray that you guys are with me. Oh, this is so, now we're getting, this is where like on the water slide, now we're going fast. We're going to go, this is not speed wise, but significant wise. This is hugely important to understand what's happening in our culture today. We've got to the point where his propositional issue is class struggle. You see how that can translate very quickly from an economic model to a racial model. From a model of the oppressor and the oppressed in money to the oppressor and the oppressed in skin color. And now we have a Marxist worldview with new clothing. So follow me, because from class struggle, his main premise for his ideology, I want you to see this very important reality. He moves to the main solution. If the main problem is class struggle, then the solution cannot be, well, by the individual, let's fix it. Let's improve it. Let's even reform it. Absolutely not. The only solution in Marx's mind to a class struggle is the complete abolition of the classes. You have to remove the system. So, I state it this way. The word systemic, which you hear today in the news and all over the internet and all over social media, systemic identifies something as being of or pertaining to a system. Notice how important this is. It's to do with a system. It's not just racism anymore. It's systemic racism. Racism you dealt with in one way. Systemic racism is an entirely different animal. So Marxism originally and in its cultural variants necessarily insists on structural and systemic revolutions. It does not tolerate improvement. The entire system must be torn down and rebuilt. I didn't add this, but rebuilt on Marx's view. Rousseau defined righteous people by those who agreed with him. And Marx picked that up and said, the only virtuous society is the one that agrees with me. So all other societies and structures must be broken down and rebuilt based upon what Marx thought to be best. In his original vision, this pertained to capitalism. That was his enemy, the economic enemy of communism. Marx wrote this in the Communist, or he wrote this specifically, the communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Let the ruling class tremble at a communist revolution. The proletarians have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Working men of all countries unite. Now, let me reread that with some other terminology and just see if this might connect with what you see on the internet. I'm going to read just from that, from his quote at the beginning on 25 there, where it says the communists. I'm going to say this, that the social justice disdain, they disdain to the social justice advocates disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Let the whiteness class tremble at the oppressed black community and the revolution it's bringing. The Black Lives Matter organization has nothing to lose but their chains. And they have a world to win. So people of color, all of all countries unite. You see how you can just read the exact worldview right into it. Now you think, are you being a little extreme? Well, let me give you an example. I'm going to read to you from Ibram Kendi. Making millions of dollars writing books to basically condemn white people for being white. Listen to what he says. I quote, "The most threatening racist movement is not the alt-right's unlikely drive for a white ethno-state, but the regular American's drive for a race-neutral one." Let me say that again. He said that the most threatening racist movement is when the regular American has a drive for a race-neutral state. He goes on to criticize Martin Luther King, that great man, at least in terms of his call for social rights, civil rights, and calling out what we all should affirm, and that is that a person should not be treated differently on the basis of their skin color. Well, we should all affirm that a person should not be given different opportunities based on their skin color. Well, we should all stand up with passionate hatred against any thought that you discriminate people because of how they look. That's wicked and evil to the core. And Martin Luther King stood up and said those things. And this man criticizes him and says, that's not enough, because it allows for the system to continue. So let me restate it now with that in mind. The most threatening racist movement, ... is when the regular American drive is for a race-neutral state. For us to be, like Martin Luther King said, colorblind. For us to be colorblind. Kendi says that's the worst racism. For you and I to act colorblind, because it is an opiate. It's a way to give a drug to the oppressed so they don't revolt, to say, no, we don't see color, so we give you that drug and sustain our system. That's where this worldview goes. It will be satisfied with nothing less than a complete revolution of the system. You cannot reform or improve it. So, look at what happens next. Even if this means by force, this whole idea that Marx called for countries to unite against the oppressing class of owners, he goes on and says, if the proletariat during its contest with the bourgeoisie is compelled by the force of circumstances to organize itself as a class, now remember, he hates class and he wants to remove class, but he says, but you know what, if in the process we actually make a class, that's okay. It's okay if we can make a class for the sake of demolishing the classes. So it's okay if we do that. If by means of revolution it makes itself the ruling class, only if it could be the ruling class. And if it's the ruling class, as such, it will sweep away by force and the old conditions of production, then it will, along with these conditions, have swept away the conditions for the existence of class antagonisms and of classes generally. And then he goes on to actually claim that it will dissolve, that class will dissolve, that the proletariat that takes power by force will then render the power and just give it up and share it with everybody. It's never happened, ever. When these ideologies have been applied, they've never, ever shown that result. All right, one more time here. John Frame says Christians were in the vanguard he points out rightly and contradicts Marx. He says, no, Marx, you're wrong, because while oppression is real, while violent revolution is not necessary to overcome it. And then he gives this example. Christians were in the vanguard in abolishing the slave trade. It wasn't Marxist ideas, which they were alive. They didn't do it. It abolished slavery itself, also in the care of orphans and widows, which Marxism never cared for. Improving education, encouraging science and art, which Marxism didn't. But Marx thought that religions and liberal social movements should not be encouraged. Why? In his view, they were counterproductive because they waste precious time and energy and do not get to the root of the problems. You hear that? Don't give me your gospel, Christians. So listen, when you go on social media or will you try to dialogue with someone who's coming at you with woke ideology and you try to talk to them in terms of gospel, effectively, you are like this, a hindrance and counterproductive to progress. Why? Because it wastes precious time and energy and does not get to the root of the problem. What then is it? Now watch this. The real problems, he and later Marxists argued, are structural. Your gospel only deals with one person at a time. This problem is systemic. Your offer has no value to this systemic problem. So, are you with us or not? That's the dialogue. Your Christianity will not solve this. That's the dialogue. So you either have to join us or your silence is violence. By you not joining our cause to revolt against the system, you're an accomplice to the system, and you're actually part of the problem. You're trying to fix this with an opiate because you are actually the racist. Are you with me? Do you see? This is exactly how that works, because that's Marxism. It's structural. And listen to this last statement. They cannot be solved until there is a radical change in the very nature of society. I could go on. I don't have the time to go through every bit of this, so I'm going to skip the ethics part. I would just point out that Karl Marx rejected all forms of absolutism. He rejected that there is any absolute truth. That puts him in a very odd position to be advancing a universal worldview across all nations. The problem with this is his ethics were profoundly corrupt, inconsistent, and often contradictory. Just take note of that. You can read that later. I do want to show you one direct fruit of it. And I might just ask this question. What do these things have in common? The destruction of historic monuments. The deconstruction of the traditional family. Defunding the police. Sexual autonomy. And a new revolution of identity. Censorship. What do these otherwise unrelated, independent, disparate features in our culture, what do they have in common? They're all part of the system. No. They're part of the system. They're part of the system. So what they have in common is they're all part of a system. And that's why you will have the voice, the woke voice, advocating this is right, tearing down monuments. This is right, sexual identities. What does that have to do with racism? It's part of the system. You must overthrow the system. The system is the key. So look with me at 27, family. How does family get involved in the discussion? In Marx's worldview, the family was a part of the system. Since God no longer defined morals, he saw the traditional family as merely an expedient of capitalism. Can you believe that? He actually called marriage private prostitution. He disdained Judeo-Christian structures of the home. And he sought to overthrow it because it was an obstacle to his utopia. Watch how this goes on. Since God no longer defined the morals, he saw the traditional family as merely an expedient of capitalism and therefore a social hindrance to progress, if not a social evil. Marx taught that families based on natural law and Judeo-Christian values breed inequality and feed on greed and systemic oppression. In addressing the family, Marxism states this, and I quote, it will transform the relations between the sexes into a purely private matter which concerns only the persons involved and into which society has no occasion to intervene. Did you understand what he said? He just said human sexuality in terms of its expression and experience is going to be something entirely personal and private, and it's nobody's business, and it's no longer something to be held in honor as a family thing. Marriage. Marriage is abolished. And then he goes on, it can do this since it does away with private property and educate children on a communal basis. Ooh. And in this way, removes the two bases of traditional marriage, the dependence rooted in private property of the women and the man on the man and of the children on the parents. He saw any inequalities, even parent-to-child inequalities, one with more power than the other, as inherently oppressive. And so therefore, the only way to solve this is to have sexuality completely free to personal choice anywhere and however. And if a child results, the child is not yours, it belongs to the state. And we will make sure that we redistribute all things equally. So, how does LGBTQ fit into the whole business on racism? It's part of the system that must be destroyed. And that system is Judeo-Christian. It's revolutionary, this whole worldview. So, on March 17th, 1883, Frederick Engels said these telling words in his eulogy at the funeral of Karl Marx. He said, "For Marx was before all else a revolutionary. His real mission in life was to contribute in one way or another to the overthrow of capitalist society and of the forms of government which it had brought into being. Fighting was his element. He fought with passion, a tenacity, and a success such as few could rival. Marx was the best hated and most culminated man of his time. His name and his work will endure through the ages." Well, indeed, few philosophers have changed, or philosophies have changed the world as much as Marx, but the change has been almost entirely for the worse. Indeed, it has been the source of monstrous evils. In the name of Marxism, socialism, and communism, millions of people have been killed and imprisoned in horrible conditions. Marx himself did not intend for his philosophy to cause such atrocious levels of death and suffering, but he certainly bears some responsibility for the results of his philosophizing. I want to just briefly share this destructive force of Marxism. Communism has never concealed the fact that it rejects all absolute concepts of morality. It scoffs at good and evil as indisputable categories. Communism considers morality to be relative. Depending upon circumstances, any act, including the killing of thousands, could be good or bad. It all depends upon class ideology, defined by a handful of people. It is considered awkward to use seriously such words as good and evil, but if we are to be deprived of these concepts, what will be left? We will decline to the status of animals. Well, these, again, are the words of a man who understood Marxism not by theory alone, but by personal suffering and experience. He suffered under communism, and he wrote this elsewhere, and it is profound. "I am very much aware that Eastern Slavic Orthodoxy, which during the 65 years of communist rule has been the subject of persecution even fiercer and more extensive than that of early Christian times. 15 million peasants were brought to death for the purpose of destroying our national way of life and extirpating religion from the countryside. Hatred of religion is rooted in communism." And he goes on to say that these certain advocates' obsession with destroying religion, they brought about a ruinous revolution that has swallowed up some 60 million of our people. Another author says, "Marxism has produced the greatest degree of social, physical, and moral ruin the world has ever known." This is the worldview, yes, that is behind woke. I'm not suggesting that the economic pieces are. I'm saying that the fundamental basis of it is. Lastly, I just want to go over this brief. Francis Schaeffer said this in 1979. Very insightful, even perhaps prophetic for our time. He said this, "We must not sit back and think, oh, it could never happen here." He's talking America. We see Marxism. Oh, it could never happen here. Worse still, we must not be confused into thinking the issue is principally or only military or economic power. The issue is more subtle, more immediate, a cancer-like growth which is in our midst right now, the materialist philosophy which underlies the Western humanistic worldview. Marx may have proposed an economic system different from our own, but we have shared his basic worldview. 1979. Give it some time to stew in the universities, and it finds a new dress. Well, the worldview of woke is based on this concept. You'll notice the triangle. Ontology speaks of being and the ultimate source of all things that are real. In Christian theology, that is God. Personhood comes from God. Authority derives from his being. All truth and reality is contingent upon him and his self-revelation. Empiricism, in this worldview, it's materialism. Behind the worldview that's out there today in our universities, the reason why Darwinism fits very well with this, at the very same time, it is incredibly contradictory, because Darwin himself said that the Negro man is a lower species that will be, well, and I'll quote it in the workbook for you, that will be exterminated naturally by natural selection within 50 years. So he was very much a racist. And yet that worldview is being paired with Marxism, and somehow they come out in harmony. It's the nature of Marxist relativism, that you can have contradictory claims within the same little package. It's absurdity, absolute absurdity. But here's the idea, materialism. In other words, Darwinism fits because it's materialistic. It doesn't need God. Everything's just material, matter in motion. So that's what's behind the worldview today in our universities. That's what's being taught in critical race theory. It's materialism. There is no God. The idea of epistemology, how do we come to know anything? It's not by theory, it's not by thought, it's not by abstract realities or laws or reason even. It's been reduced to empiricism, which means only what I encounter, what my senses can tell. So you can't even argue now with this worldview, because it says, no, these are just thoughts. You're just saying these things. No, this is my experience. Have you ever heard this? That you can't argue because it's my experience. That a white person can't say anything about what a black person knows about racism because you can't experience it. So empiricism trumps all of your theories and all of your knowledge. Empiricism is the basis of epistemology. And then add to that relativism. Well, the rules, like if you go to Chaz last year up in Seattle, the rules inside can be different from the rules outside. That's okay for them. It's relative. Because outside they're saying, we hate all racism, we hate all this classism, but inside they designated garden space only for blacks. And all the whites couldn't go there. But that's okay, because their ethics are based on relativism. In Christianity, we have God as the source and being and authority of all truth, ontology. Epistemology, knowledge, comes by revelation, not by simple human discovery. We're fallen. Everything we will ever discover will be tainted by our own interpretations. God must reveal and open our hearts to know truth. So the Christian worldview says, no, it's not empiricism, it's revelation. And as far as ethics are concerned, it is truly based upon what God reveals. It's based upon God's word, which is God's law, and he determines what's right and what's wrong, not us, and it's not relative to our situation. Very significant contrast between these worldviews. Let me ask you to go with me briefly to You can see the academy on the next page, and the point there is just to point out that cultural Marxism has been taught in the academy significantly and has been embraced with great enthusiasm, especially among the intellectuals, and it has been more recently producing much of what we're hearing. The woke roots, Vodi Bakum goes in and traces the critical theory itself, which spawned into critical race theory and all these other variations, including sexual autonomy, and traces them very plainly, very, very plainly back to Marx through the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School, Frankfurt is a city in Germany. And what happened is, think about this. You had followers of Karl Marx who believed in his ideology and championed it and thought this is the hope of the world. And you had this great, powerful, charismatic leader named Adolf Hitler applying the very ideology of Marxism. And it fails miserably. So you have these people in Frankfurt who see the failure of Marxism, and what do? They flee Frankfurt. They have to, because a lot of them are Jewish. And they begin to go back to the drawing board, and they begin to think, we need a new way. We need a new way to promote this atheistic, naturalistic worldview. We need a new way for Marxism to be justified. So they came up with, and Bakum identifies this plainly and powerfully, they developed, in the middle there of his quote, these men developed critical theory as an expansion of conflict theory, which is what Marx wrote, and applied it more broadly, including other social sciences and philosophy. So they moved it out of the realm of economics and moved it into the realm of sociology, other factors of oppression. And when they did that, their main goal was to address structural issues causing inequality. They worked from the assumption that the current social reality was broken, and they needed to identify the people and institutions that could make changes and provide practical goals for social transformation. In the social sciences, critical is geared toward identifying and exposing problems in order to facilitate revolutionary political change. In other words, it implies revolution. It is not interested in reform. So, and I give an example there of Du Bois, who in 1933 does the same thing and basically says, no, let's not try to reform racism in the system. He bucks the system and goes down and starts an entire new school of thought. And he says, it's because I read the Frankfurt School of Thought and I read Marx. And Du Bois champions what then later develops into critical race theory. This is the history. This is the development of the worldview that is now all around us. You'll notice there in the middle of page 31, it's a new idea with an old ideology. Old threats often find new tactics, don't they? The worldview behind the woke banner is not new. To be sure, many of the players and plays are new, but the game is still the same. An old dogma is trying a new door. A worn-out force is confronting our culture in new clothes. So social justice, racism, and related atrocities, and they are wicked and evil, those things, social injustice, I should say, and racism and related atrocities are, well, the Trojan horse by which Marxism is infiltrating the culture. It's been changed. It's coming in. You know the Trojan horse story, right? The Greeks? They're losing against Troy. Troy's a stronghold, and they regroup and think, this is how we'll do it. We'll let them think they won, and we'll give them the victory trophy, this wonderful, massive horse, and they roll it up kind of with the white flag. Okay, here's your trophy. They all retreat. Troy, in their great arrogance, begins to celebrate. Oh, look at this. We're the champs. They go to bed at night. The big horse is inside the courtyard of the palace fortress, and suddenly, boards start popping off of the horse, and warriors start coming out of the horse, and quietly begin to slay Troy. It's kind of like that. You can have Trojan horses coming in looking good, actually celebrating something, and end up being the means of attack. How could this happen? Well, Sunshine, again, Glenn Sunshine said this back in 2009, as society's worldview can change over time, resulting in changes of the culture, worldviews generally evolve slowly. Occasionally, he says, worldviews are overturned in periods of social, political, and religious unrest. Does anyone remember 2020? What might have been the open door for the Trojan horse? Well, I'm out of time. There's so much more, as you can see, but I do want to encourage you all to remember when people hear about Marxism, they have a tendency to think that, well, you're just politically motivated. You're just trying to defend America, capitalism, democracy. No. It's not our culture that I'm seeking to reclaim. It's Christ's church. I'm genuinely urging you to understand these things, not in hopes, although I do believe that there's a great evil potential with Marxism politically, but I'm saying the main issue here is how do you be an ambassador of Christ to this culture? How do you communicate to this culture who will not engage with you at this level because it's a systemic problem and your offer doesn't solve the system, doesn't destroy the system? I want to just remind you of these last few things and I'll close us. Marxism is built on hate. He constructed his entire worldview on the assumption that there are two kinds of people, oppressors and oppressed. How the culture today has altered who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed is secondary. The worldview is still the same. It's still without God, and it still cries one major word, systems, systems, systems. That's the problem. I'm urging you, I'm pleading with you, don't buy it. Let me give you one example, and then I want to give you biblical encouragement on how to respond. The one example is Black Lives Matter. We'll talk more about racism on critical race theory section, but for right now, I just want you to know that Patrice Cullors, who is one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter organization, identifies herself and her fellow organizers as, and I quote, trained Marxists. Trained Marxists. So here's what I want you to hear from them. They took this down on their website when they began to be criticized for it, and it seemed to present a bit of a stumbling block for their movement. This was on their website, and you can still get to it from an archived ancillary site. And it says this, and I quote, "We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. We do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirements." This, beloved and friends, is in a relatively short statement of faith entitled What We Believe on the Black Lives Matter website. A relatively short statement of faith, and this is one of their main points, that we are committed to dismantle marriage and disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family. How does that relate to Black lives? The system. It's the system. And they are trained Marxists who are calling all to arms against the system. I want to remind us all that this is a form of blame shifting. Is racism real? Do people treat people wrongly because of appearances, because of ethnicities? Absolutely. Is that something that we should at all tolerate? Absolutely not. We should hate it. There is only one race It's the human race. It's made in the image of God, and all before God are equal ontologically. All have dignity and worth and value. All, no matter what they believe or what they do, they all have value. Everyone. And no one has the right in any way to violate the value God gives them. But to begin to blame systems is a form of blame shifting. To deny any kind of individual correction of heart is a form of blame shifting. You can't fix this. It has to be something else. Something else is the problem. Blame shifting becomes the massive problem and barrier to us penetrating this culture. Blame shifting. So, with that in mind, I want to remind you that hearts change policies, policies don't change hearts. And I'm going to close with this. Hearts change policies, policies don't change hearts. I could say it this way. Hearts change systems, systems don't change hearts. So remember with me, beloved and friends, all injustice, all racism, all abuse, all crime, all are evil, and they come from the heart, not from a system. They come from a heart. Mark 7:21, from within, out of the heart of man come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. Matthew 15:18, but what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, and slander. Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Romans 1, verse 21, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and the animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their own hearts to impurity, to dishonor, honoring of their bodies among themselves. Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator who is blessed forever. Amen. Romans 8:5, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. For to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God. For it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. Ephesians 4:17. Now this I say and testify in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do outside the covenant of grace in the futility of their minds. For they are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. And one more, Colossians 1:21. And you who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds. Beloved and friends, unless the heart changes, the evil will not. And as our brother earlier was pointing out, it's so true that all of these things under the banner of woke are the consequence of personal, individual choices of wickedness, evil, sin. The only true solution is to take care of that problem. And Marxism will never, never take away sin. Beloved and friends, I want to encourage you, those who have a handout, read this section on a new humanity. The reason why I close here is because deep down inside, those who are promoting these things are broken. And what they want is a new humanity. They want a land where you can live in peace, where people don't hurt other people. My heart is broken because the things that they're wanting, mostly when they talk about wanting peace, harmony, community, those things are beautiful. They're what we're made for. The tragedy is they try to fabricate it as they hate God. May we mourn. This world needs Christ. All justice is first vertical. All harmony is first vertical. Unless you're made right with your Maker, you can forget about systems helping anything in any ultimate sense. May God help us be witnesses. Engage thoughtfully and intellectually. Don't just dismiss. Don't get angry. But engage and reason and ask them, where are you getting that thought? And what are you wanting in your heart? And help them to see the difference between the worldview they're advocating and the worldview of the gospel. When you speak to the culture, help them to see Christ. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time with your beloved bride, whom I love. I thank you for each one, and I ask that you would use even this to minister to them. And through them, I pray you would impact many. And Lord, we lift to you those who are confused and who do not understand these things, and those who are advocating, oh, something so subtle at times and so deceptive. I pray that you would help us to understand just how serious it is that we take and we stand on Christ alone. Nothing else has any value to overcome the lust of the heart. Help us now to praise Christ, to be recentered on him and strengthened by him, and to proclaim his majesty in this world. For we are in it, but not of it. And all of these things we thank you for and pray in Christ's name. Amen.